This Is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. There's probably 100 things you'd rather do than go to the DMV, but sometimes there's no avoiding it. In the last year, impressions of the DMV here in Connecticut have only gotten worse. A multi-million dollar upgrade to the DMV's computer system was meant to improve wait times. The DMV actually shut down for 1 week last August to accommodate the improvements. Here's Governor Daniel Malloy addressing concerns last summer.
You know, I think it's going to take a couple of weeks to fully work the system through. You got a new technology that a whole bunch of folks have to get used to, and they're doing their best to do that, and certainly getting plenty of experience at it. And there was, at least for a few days, an accumulated backlog.
Well, that backlog didn't clear up as expected. Instead, that new system made wait times even worse. There was even a bug in the system that caused some residents to actually get pulled over to suspended registrations when they were actually current. Now, there's a new DMV commissioner at the helm. Michael Bisdera is here to talk about how the agency is working on improvements. Have you been to the local DMV lately? What's been your experience? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, that number, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. I want to welcome Commissioner Bisdera to the studios of WMPR. Welcome to Where We Live.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
The first question a lot of us were thinking is, why take this job?
Well, quite frankly, it's a terrific job. It's very challenging, but it's exciting. I enjoy it very much. I work with a great team of people and employees, and my goal really is to try to get the agency moving forward with a much stronger customer focus.
I think people like to learn a little bit more about our commissioners, at least your background. Where did you come from?
Born and raised in Connecticut, born and raised in East Hartford. Now live in Wallingford with my wife and three kids. Educated here in Connecticut at the University of Connecticut. Went through public schools in the town of East Hartford. After I graduated from UConn way back in the 1980s, started work at the General Assembly and stayed there for several years working in the Senate Democrats' office. And then after that, took a job with a quasi-public state agency ultimately ended up here at DMV.
So you're familiar with how government runs, sometimes slowly.
Correct.
And before you took on this job, what were your experiences at the DMV? Do you remember?
I do. In fact, way back when I first got my license in the Weathersfield office, it took a bit of time. But in anything I've done since then, if I've been able to do certain transactions online, that's what I've been trying to do and urging not only our customers, but my colleagues and friends and acquaintances as well to try to keep traffic out of our branches.
Your predecessor, Andreas Ayala, resigned from the post of commissioner of the DMV just after a year. There were lengthy wait times during that year, even before the computer upgrade, I believe, because of issues with a program called Drive Only. So it allowed licenses for undocumented immigrants. Can you talk a little bit through some of the issues that have come up in the last year and a half, starting with that program Drive Only for undocumented immigrants?
Sure. So right now the program is running well. It did start back in January of 2015. So it's been up and running for about a year and a half. We've issued about 22,000 drive-only licenses so far and about 28,000 permits. And I'm sure you're aware. I mean, the intent of the program as passed by the General Assembly was really to ensure that folks who were driving already in many cases now had to be tested, know the rules of the road, were able to get insurance, and ultimately make our roads safer for every Connecticut motorist.
How is it looking in terms of the number of people that are applying? Is your staff able to move through these applications pretty quickly?
We are. The General Assembly, when the program began, gave us the necessary funds to go ahead and implement the program. So throughout our branches, we have staff dealing with folks who take the written knowledge test. And by the way, they have to go online and schedule an appointment just like any other resident of the state of Connecticut who needs to take the learner permit written test. So there's no difference there. And like I said earlier, the program is running well.
I'm here with the new commissioner of the DMV, Michael Bezdera. If you have a question for the commissioner, maybe you're at the DMV now waiting to be called for something that you need to do, including getting a new license or renewing registration. That number, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Let's talk about the computer upgrades. It's been almost a year since the DMV actually shut down for a week to help modernize its system. And then after we heard Governor Malloy saying that they thought that it would take just a couple of weeks to get the new system online, to get people trained, to work through the backlog of being closed for a week. Instead, we saw wait times increase. And so talk about, how we got to that point where, even with the millions of dollars spent to upgrade the system, you were still having problems with wait times.
So when we first started, as you indicated, we did shut down for a week to help transition the data, et cetera. And one of the biggest issues that any state agency across the country, in fact, not just DMVs, faces when they do one of these computer modernizations is the data integrity, and the information that was in our old system had been built up over many, many decades, and some of it was incorrect over many years. And so when you convert all of that information over to a new system, that's where some of the struggles started. And since that time, we've made great progress. We need to continue to drive down wait times as low as we can, and that's one of my main goals. But we're not there yet, and I'm working with our vendor 3M, holding their feet to the fire, trying to fix all the bugs and glitches that still remain, and working on that.
You mentioned 3M, so this is a Minnesota-based company?
Correct.
And are they – I thought I had read that there are three phases. After the second phase, didn't you terminate them, but you expect them to at least get the first two phases, the bugs worked out?
That's absolutely right. So we're in phase two right now where their registration computer system upgrade, and we're working with them right now. The plan back in February, March – we both jointly agreed that phase three, which would involve upgrading the licensing side of the system, would not be done by them. So right now we're looking at how we're going to proceed with that phase. But right now my main job is to make sure our registration system is up and running and functioning as well as can be. And that's where we are right now.
So if 3M isn't doing the work, who's doing the work now?
3M is still on site. Mm-hmm. They are performing. It's their system. We are working with them to fix the bugs and glitches. And in fact, ultimately, when we, the DMV, decide to accept the system, there's still a one-year warranty phase as well. So during that phase as well, if there are any problems or issues, 3M would be responsible for those too.
We're getting some tweets from listeners. I wanted to read one to you, a tweet from Jeff. He wants to know why the DMV is so slow each day, and he notices they only start to hustle around 4:30 p.m.
Well, Jeff, thanks for the comment. Generally speaking, the vast majority of our employees are terrific and do a great job. We are open Tuesday through Saturday. We are closed on Mondays to the public, but we're open every day from 7:45 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon, and we're open later on Thursdays. And our employees don't leave actually until the last customer is served. So if you're there, you will be taken care of.
I want to take a call now. I don't want to mispronounce your name. We have a caller from Stratford calling into Where We Live. Is it Hyacinth?
Yes, it is.
So tell me, Hyacinth, your comment or question for Commissioner Bezdera.
I just heard he said that most of the people working there are nice and generous, but sometimes you meet that one guy who makes the 5 or 6 hour waiting worse. I was there one time the past year, it was 9 hours I had to wait. I got in a little after 9, and I was there till after 5 after they closed because the gentleman had a bad attitude and he made a mistake and no one was willing to help him solve the problem. He worked there for many years because I remember him in 99 in Norwalk, worked in DMV. So there's some revamping to be done in there with the people who work there. But overall, the managers are very nice, but sometimes you get that one guy who makes it worse. And another problem I have with DMV is those dealerships that come and do the registration, and it's not fair. They walk in, 5 hours after you, they register 30 cars, and they move on and leave you there. I understand the dealership, and they pay taxes like us, but for some reason, the system is not right. That they come in on 30, 40 cars, they register in, and you know, I'm there for 4 or 5 hours, and, you know, so now I got to get somebody to get my kids off the bus because I'm late at DMV waiting for 5 hours. So there's some more issues in there that needs to be worked out.
So, Hyacinth, before you go, can you let the commissioner know which branch that you were visiting where you had that long wait
Bridgeport.
Time? Bridgeport.
I've been there many times, and, I mean, the last time for the 9 hours, the managers and the employees were worried about me because I was so cool and calm. They thought I was probably going to come in and kill everybody in there because I was so calm, and they found it unusual that I waited after the guy made a mistake. But, you know, they were just surprised that somebody waited that long for their mistake. And, you know, I'm not the only one because I sit among the people and I listen and I hear the stories. There are some simple things that could be fixed, and it starts with the employees. And the guy who, like I said, who was there, I don't know, I think his name is Keith or something like that, and he worked there for a long time because I remember being in Norwalk. But there is one employee that makes it worse. From, you know, I have 3 vehicles and 2 trailers, and, you know, I like DMV because it used to be easy and simple, but I don't know if it's a new system, but it got so worse that I have a trailer to register. I'm not even going over there anymore. I just park the trailer and I rent a U-Haul instead because I just don't want the experience anymore.
All right, Hyacinth, I want the commissioner to respond to some of the things that you'd said, but thank you for calling. So he had mentioned he's there waiting a long time. All of a sudden someone comes in and needs to register 30 cars. I mean, that seems like a problem.
Yeah, and so to that point, thank you very much, Hyacinth, for your call. I appreciate your comments, kind comments for most of our employees. As you said, you know, we do have some issues occasionally, and, you know, we're working, doing our best in terms of employee training to make sure the customer experience is as quick but as professional and as nice as possible. In terms of the dealers, we do have a system in place whereby there should not be one dealer registering 30 cars or more. In fact, the system we have in place now, dealers can come into branches up until about 1 o'clock. They can do 2 to 3 transactions at a time. Beyond that, they do then have to go and get another number to be able to process those. And it's a balance, meaning we understand, Hyacinth, where, you know, a regular customer is in there and they see someone doing 2 or 3 transactions, it might be frustrating. On the other side of the coin, we also, as you said, have to serve our dealer community, and we try to have that balance whereby both the business community and our regular customers are equally served. So.
All right, I want to take another call. John from West Hartford, you're on Where We Live.
Good morning. I just wanted to share my experience within the last month at the Wethersfield branch. Brought in a car that I bought for my son to register from out of state. So initially we had to get a temporary registration. 2-hour and 15-minute wait. Came back 3 days later because we had the emissions test done. Again, all my paperwork in line. 2-hour and 20-minute wait, again, at the Wethersfield branch. I will say that the staff, very professional, courteous, but that type of waiting time, it's excessive. We're talking almost 5 hours total time to register a motor vehicle where I had all the paperwork in place.
All right, Larry, thank you for your call. Just stay on the line so the commissioner, John from West Hartford, thank you for your call. Just stay on the line so the commissioner can answer that. Are there services that residents can do online where they don't have to wait for 2.5 hours? Are there just certain things like registering a car, you know, a new car that you have to be there with the paperwork?
Well, so to John's point, if it's a out-of-state car and it's not a new car through a dealership, they would have to come in. And so I can certainly understand his concerns, and I would agree that 2 hours and 15 minutes and 2 hours and 20 minutes for both of those is too long, and I'm doing everything I can to drive that wait time much lower. But there are things you can do online. So if you're renewing your registration, you can renew your registration online. If you want to cancel your plates and your registration, you can do that online. You can order a variety of special plates, special background plates, those kinds of things. Online as well. In addition, you can even look up, you know, whether your driver license is valid or invalid, your registration, whether it's current. So there are a number of things people can do online without having come to a branch. But that said, when they do, I can certainly appreciate and understand the wait times in many cases are way too high, and I'm doing everything I can to drive those lower.
When we say the wait times are too high, I mean, what is the problem? Is it just too many people are there, too little staff? Is it when you're working through this one instance of registering a car, it just takes time to get through the system? I mean, what's causing that long wait?
So we're looking at that right now. In fact, we've engaged our licensing vendor, Morpho Trust, to look at how we can better synchronize our data as we go forward in terms of looking at phase three to upgrade our licensing system. But they're also helping us look at process improvements in our branches and looking specifically at the registration side of the aisle to see if there are things we can do for our customers to cut down the steps, cut down the red tape, so that we can get customers in and out quicker.
I want to take one more call before we go to break. Mike from Hartford, you're on Where We Live.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
I just moved to Connecticut from Pennsylvania, and I registered my car and got my license. And I was shocked that in this state, it took me about 6.5 hours to do that process. And from talking to people at the DMV, they said that that was incredibly quick, where in Pennsylvania, that whole process would take about 45 minutes. I'm just wondering, why do we have differences between states as far as registration when some states are really efficient about it?
Mike, before you get off the phone, I lived in Pennsylvania many years ago. What does Pennsylvania have that Connecticut doesn't in terms of registering that car?
Well, everything, you do it all in the DMV, and you need the exact same requirements. But if you look in the websites, the processes are very similar. It's just when I got to the DMVs, it seemed very unorganized, and I had to go to two or three different people to do the process, where in Pennsylvania, I take a number, I walk up to one desk, and the customer service person at the desk does everything for me, and I don't have to walk around. And it sounds counterproductive, but it's incredibly more efficient than what we're doing here in Connecticut.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call. Do you want to respond to Mike, Commissioner Bisdera?
Sure. Thanks, Mike. I would agree the wait time you described is too long. I can't speak for Pennsylvania. I do know on our licensing side, we specifically have a couple of different examiners involved in a transaction for purposes of fraud prevention, so that one person isn't solely in charge of handling someone getting their driver license from soup to nuts. But regardless, even on the registration side, the system we've had in place now for about a year. Like I said, I've engaged our licensing vendor to help us look at ways we can cut steps, cut some of the processes down in our branches to try to reduce that wait time dramatically in the coming month. So hopefully those things bear fruit, and I'm holding working everyone as hard as I can to make sure we reduce the wait times for our customers. So.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. In studio with us is Connecticut's new DMV Commissioner, Michael Bisdera. He's going to tell us more about how he hopes to transform the agency. If you're on the line, keep holding. We'll be right back. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We're talking to Connecticut's Department of Motor Vehicles Commissioner, Michael Bisdera. He took the job earlier this year after his predecessor, Andreas Ayala, resigned during a tumultuous year plagued with long wait times and failed computer upgrades to fix some of the problems. If you have a question or comment for the commissioner, join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Where We Live. You know, I wanted to ask you, Commissioner, with the budget deficits that the state's been dealing with, how has your department changed in terms of workforce?
So we've actually been very fortunate. We did receive a small cut by the General Assembly at the end of the session back in May, but of about $850,000. But we've been able to absorb that without really having to perform any layoffs. That said, we're looking every day, and I'm looking every day at ways to make things more efficient. We live in a new economic reality. I recognize we're not going to be getting any new employees. So anything we do going forward has to result in improvements for our customers to make things quicker and faster. And so that's what I'm looking at.
We're getting a tweet from the Connecticut Mirror. It says the DMV budget plans several positions will not be filled to save $500,000. Is that what you're talking about in terms of absorbing?
Exactly right.
These several positions, are these frontline staff, or can you tell us a little bit more about the ones not being filled?
Well, I can't get into the specifics, but they were about $500,000 worth of employee salaries. There was some cut in our equipment budget as well as other expenses, and the whole total added up to about $850,000. But like I said, we've been very fortunate compared to other agencies. So, but going forward, I'm still looking to make things as efficient as possible, recognizing that there may be future cuts down the road, too. So I have to be prepared for that.
And how many DMV staff are there?
There is about 610 full-time employees, about another couple of hundred part-time employees, for a total of close to 800 employees.
So we have a lot of calls, Commissioner Bisdera. I want to take a call now. Larry from Stratford Springs. Larry, you're on Where We Live.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of comments and then a two-part question. I recently registered a car from out of state. My wait to confirm the other callers was excruciatingly long. It seemed that people behind me in line got numbers that were ahead of me after I was waiting, so they were served ahead of me, which was seemed to be unfair. I did update my license through AAA, which was a great experience, and I avoided the DMV. So those are a few comments. My two-part question is, I've been a lifelong resident of Connecticut. I'm 50 years old. I've never had really an efficient experience in all those years at the DMV. It's worse now. Would they consider privatizing the DMV because a lot of private companies do it better than government, and I think we all realize that at a certain level. And will the commissioner, who has defined some goals from the governor and himself, if those goals aren't achieved in a timely manner, will he pledge to resign his position if those goals aren't met?
All right, Larry, that's your two-part question. So first off, we had talked a little bit during the break about that bill that was proposed in the last session that speaks to Larry's question about outsourcing some of the services that are traditionally done at the DMV. Can you talk about that privatization?
Sure. I wouldn't necessarily call it privatization. Right now, most viewers or listeners know, and Larry mentioned he got his driver license updated at the AAA. So we've had a longstanding trusted business relationship with AAAs for driver license renewals. During the session, there was a bill to have us also expand that opportunity at AAAs or other entities for our registration side of the aisle. And so we've been working with AAAs here in Connecticut. There are 16 locations looking at once we get our registration system stabilized for at our DMV branches, we do plan on rolling that out at our AAAs as well. So to give our customers another option, another location to go to, so that they're not only going to a DMV branch office. And we're hopeful to get that going as soon as possible.
So it sounds like registering a car really does bog down the system. So by outsourcing that to the AAA, you anticipate that the wait times at the branches will be lessened?
That would be the hope. And it would be really for registration renewals, the more simple, clean, easy to do transactions. Just like for licensing, they do driver license renewals. They don't do original issuance and that kind of thing. But to your point, yes, it would definitely help our customers and help reduce wait times at DMV branches. So,
I want to take another call. Adam from Stamford. Adam, you're on Where We Live.
Hi there. I actually have, I think, a more positive story. I needed to turn in some plates. I got a new car. And I was speaking with my father, who actually owns an insurance agency, and he was saying, oh, you got to go into DMV and this whole process. And so I went online to figure out how it worked. It turned out it was about 2 weeks after the new computer system was put in. I did the entire thing online. It was like 11 o'clock at night and took about 5 minutes. I got a receipt, which I was able to bring into my city hall to deal with the taxes. And the whole thing was completely painless, very fast. Even my father was amazed that you could do this online. But a great innovation, so thank you for that.
All right. Well, Adam, go ahead.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So far, one positive call.
Thank you, Adam.
So can we talk a little bit about just the future of the DMV? You know, because we so often rely on our phones, our tablets, When you look at, you know, the backlog in your local branches, and obviously you're really trying to push residents to, when you can, go online to do so. I mean, when you look at the online interface, is it easy to use, or is that part of the problem?
It is easy to use, and thank you, Adam, for those nice words, and appreciate that, in fact, you were able to do your transaction at your time at home. And as you said, Lucy, with the world changing the way it is so quickly now with mobile and tablets and phones, you can do a lot of things online. And so part of my goal is to have have customers that are now coming into our branches who could be doing some of these transactions online to do so. And so we're looking closely at how best can we inform and educate our customers. Right now, about 35% of the customers who are in our branches could potentially be doing those transactions online. And we just looked at the data closer and realized that if all of those 35% were to go online and do those transactions, our wait times would actually go down from about an hour, what they were in June overall for all transactions, that they would be dropped probably by 15 or 20 minutes. So anything we can do and anything our customers can do to renew their registration online, cancel plates online, do those kinds of things would be very helpful.
I want to take a call. We've been hearing a lot about people having trouble registering or doing license renewals. But Mary from New Haven, you're calling about a boat trailer.
That's correct. I have a boat and boat trailer that I purchased 10 years ago, and because of some situations, hadn't used it. So I went to DMV to renew the registration. I brought along the plate. Because of several moves, I don't have the title with me. They confiscated the plates and could not find the plate in your computer system because you had just made the switch over. But I'm wondering if there's an alternative means of my registering the trailer so that I can, again, use the boat.
All right. Thank you for your call, Mary. Commissioner?
So, Mary, if I heard you correctly, it sounded like it was in our system previously, but it sounds like it was not registered in quite some time. So odds are you're probably going to have to get new plates for that trailer. So you would have to come into a branch.
All right. And again, we're talking with the new DMV Commissioner, Michael Bisdera. Peter from Stanford, you're on Where We Live.
Yes. I'm not going to tell you about my experiences. I think I spent 2 days. I had I went to two different places. I went to Norwalk for a few hours. Then I went to Danbury because I thought that line was going to be better. I think at Danbury I actually got there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I actually got out about 9:20. And I also went to the AAA, and I went here and there. And it turns out I couldn't get my PS, my public service license, but I got a couple other things done. But I'm wondering, hello.
Yes, go ahead, Peter.
I'm wondering what other states. We have 49 other states in this country. We have different countries all around the world. What do they do? Can you look at what California does? What does Alaska do? I know that Connecticut is different because we don't have a county system. We have a state system. You know, we're in New England, so it's not what New York does, which is a countywide system. But we are different than other states, so that presents a problem. What does Texas do? Is Connecticut better or worse than Texas? Is it worse than Ohio, Illinois, all these states? Because I'm 50 years old. The DMV has been bad when I was a kid, and it hasn't been any better. It hasn't seen any improvements, in 49 years. What do other states do, or is it bad all across the board? If you go to Washington, do they have the same complaints that we do?
All right, Peter. I'm laughing a little bit because I'm thinking that a lot of people in Connecticut don't want to be like Texas, but we understand your point. Commissioner, what are some of the systems out there that are better than what Connecticut has?
Well, we want to be as good as we can possibly be, regardless of the state. So I do, and we do look at what other states are doing and vice versa. So, for instance, Massachusetts does have a similar setup as we do, meaning they do driver licensing and registrations under the same roof, so to speak. Other states, they're separated. But they also do use AAAs to register vehicles. They don't allow it at every single AAA branch, but they have found that that has been helpful and successful. And that's one of the things I'm looking at here, obviously, as well. I will say Other state DMV administrators, when you talk with them, they sometimes share the same frustrations, right? Meaning customers sometimes wait too long. They don't get the transaction done the way they want to get it done. And we all kind of struggle together to figure out, okay, what are other states doing, whether it's online activity, looking at different ways to reallocate staff within branches. And I'm doing all of those things as we speak. So to your point, Peter, I hear your frustration, but we do look at other states and how they do things. And anything I can glean from how other states, what they do and how they do it and do it better than Connecticut, I'm happy to try to adopt.
I want to take another quick call from Paul in Portland. Paul, we're almost out of time. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is that what I've found and don't believe is when registering a vehicle, why can't they just scan my license, scan the title of the vehicle the old title of a vehicle I'm registering, and all that information, just fill in the blanks rather than them having to hand type everything back in?
All right, Paul, thank you for your comment. Commissioner?
Well, in some cases, we do that, and it does actually self-populate, if you will. In other cases, the information does have to be re-entered. So it depends actually on the customer. But to your point, Paul, those are the kinds of things where I'm looking to try to, you know, improve our processes and slim them down as much as possible so that our customers aren't stuck waiting in line the as long as they are.
Commissioner, you've mentioned several times that you're looking at ways to improve the system. You're doing some data gathering. You know, when's the deadline for where you've taken all this feedback and then you're going to turn it into action?
So the Deputy Judine Wren, who started with me back in March, we visited all of our branches right out of the gate back in March and early April, listening to our customers, gathering data from our employees, looking at ways that we can take that information and turn it into some methods that we can apply to help reduce wait times. That said, what we've done with our vendor Morpho Trust, they are looking at a much more disciplined, data-driven approach so that in the coming 4 to 6 months, we anticipate having some process improvements piloted at different branches. And as those work out, we would then roll those out to all of the other branches as well, all with the goal of reducing our wait times.
We think we have time for one more call. Don, you're calling from Norwich. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. First, Lucy, you're doing a great job taking over for John.
Oh, thank you.
I have a public service license, and I'm frustrated all the time that I can only renew it by going to DMV. Why can't I renew that at AAA?
Well, we're looking right now as we work with AAAs to try to, in the future, roll out our registration renewal system. We're actually in discussions with them to also allow CDL, commercial driver license renewals. As far as the public service endorsement, I can take a look at that and see if that's something else we could try to add. But at this time, right now, the public service endorsement would still need to be done at the Connecticut DMV.
So if I heard you correctly, Commissioner Bisdero, so 6 months, you're going to then take a lot of the data that you're collecting, pilot out some improvements. So come February, are residents going to be seeing some changes at their local branches?
Yes, and hopefully sooner, actually. But our licensing vendor is looking at this over the coming 5 to 6 months. And during that time, we will implement whatever we think is going to be best suited to help our customers, make things faster and more efficient for them.
Before we let you go, Commissioner, because we have an election coming up, I did want to ask you to explain the motor voter registration at DMV that's being launched.
Sure. So starting next week, we will have a new, not new, but a much more electronic system in place for folks who want to apply to register to vote at the Connecticut DMV. Right now, and as we've had for many, many years, we have paper forms that people can fill out and either mail in or hand back in right then and there. But starting next week, what's really nice is that working closely with our state elections enforcement folks, the Secretary of the State's office, we are going to be having folks, when they come in for a driver license renewal or a new driver license, if they choose to register to vote there at the counter, we'll be able to accommodate them as well.
In terms of training, any concerns about people that are not eligible that might be able to then be registered to vote when they shouldn't?
Well, our system, our electronic system, is built in such a way that folks who are 17 or younger would not be able to register to vote, as well as anybody who's not a U.S. citizen. So, though that information for U.S. citizens who are eligible to vote, that is the information that would be shared with the Secretary of State's office and then sent out to the registrars of voters.
You're writing furiously during all of our calls. Obviously, there's the stuff that you it's not new to you in terms of your employee morale, people who work at the DMV. I mean, how are they feeling about, you know, always being the target of all this frustration?
Well, they've been through a lot, right? I mean, they have a difficult job to begin with, whether you're a frontline employee in branch or a phone center employee or somewhere else throughout the agency. And the last year has certainly been difficult as they've struggled with the new computer system. But I think everyone right now has vastly improved compared to where we were last summer. We had 2-hour and 41-minute waits, and right now they're down to about 60 minutes. We're working closely with them, trying to boost their morale whenever we can. But we have some terrific employees who do a really good job, and so we're going to continue to work closely with them.
I want to read a quick email from Fred. He wants to know if the staffing is adequate for the branches. Is that one of the reasons for the long wait times?
Well, we do. We think it is, and we're trying to become as efficient as we can. And as I said earlier in the conversation, my goal is to really improve things to the point where wait times come down and our customers are served as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And quite frankly, that's another reason why we're also looking to reach out to we have reached out to AAAs to at some point get the registration system with them. That'll give our customers one more location, actually 16 more locations, in order to transact their business.
I want to thank Commissioner Michael Bisdera of the Connecticut Department of Motor Vehicles. We'll have to check in with you after 6 months to see how you've transformed the DMV.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
When we return, a check-in on a program that's supposed to help families afford child care. But starting August 1st, some families will no longer be eligible. We'll find out why. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up tomorrow, the normally complicated topic of international relations is highlighted in a different lens, sports. Coming up, we look at Russia's relationship with the world in the midst of a massive doping scandal, the political backdrop of last month's Euro Cup, the upcoming Olympics in Brazil. What can be learned about the world through sports? Plus, athletes in this country are speaking up on domestic issues, specifically the Black Lives Matter movement. Tomorrow, we'll discuss politics and sports on the next Where We Live. Right now, we're going to shift focus from the DMV to a segment that looks at a change to eligibility for families who need help affording child care. Care for Kids is a state program that helps low to moderate income families in Connecticut pay for child care costs. It's paid for through the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood, but a $33 million shortfall in the child care assistance program in fiscal year 2017 means some families who need the help will now be shut out. To find out more, we're joined by Helen Figueroa, CSEA Child Care Division Director. Welcome to Where We Live, Helen.
Howdy.
So tell us a little bit about the Care for Kids program. How many families are actually eligible as of today?
Right now there are 16,000 children on the program. Given changes in the federal block grant, we are faced with not being able to handle more than 13,000 children. And that basically goes back to a law that was passed in 1995 to get parents working, and that was called the Welfare Reform Act. Mm-hmm. And the Child Care Development Block Grant is the child care subsidy program that we call Care for Kids here in this state. And for a long, long time, it was considered to be a babysitting service that basically got families off to work. Mm-hmm. And recently, in 2014, the Congress reauthorized that with the knowledge that child care is no longer babysitting and never has been. Mm-hmm. And especially for those little ones, birth to five, child care is the most important part of their lives. Mm-hmm. And so we need to, as a society, build up that service. So when Congress reauthorized the Child Care Development Block Grant in 2014, they added a lot of really good and basic standards so that children could have some stability with the caregivers that were taking care of them, and also health and safety. But beyond that, trying to make sure that children are nurtured and stimulated the way they should be in order to be able to have success in life. But that doesn't come on the cheap. Mm-hmm. So the state has been faced with having to make some decisions because those standards that were set during reauthorization come at a cost of $33 million to the state of Connecticut. And we, like many other states, are faced with, do we cut off our left arm or do we cut off our right arm? Because we cannot continue to serve the number of families on the amount of money that we currently have. Because when Congress reauthorized, they did not put a whole lot of money in mm-hmm. to implement all these really great standards.
So what happens August 1st? So there's a certain income eligibility to get in to care for kids, mm-hmm. but now because of this $33 million shortfall, there are less families that will be able to be eligible. What families are we talking about?
We're talking about all working families. Mm-hmm. And the only folks who are going to have access to the program after August 1st will be those who are former TANF or cash assistance recipients, those who are currently TANF recipients, and the young mothers who are in high school and going to school.
And when you say TANF?
TANF is cash assistance, what mm-hmm. we used okay. to say, we used to call welfare, basically. Mm-hmm. So any parent who is working and in need of child care, or maybe they're going to get a job on August 15th, mm-hmm. they're out of luck. If you're going to have your baby on August 20th, you're out of luck. Because there were two choices. Do we either reduce eligibility for everyone, mm-hmm. which would have created sort of a chutes and ladders approach to people who were actually receiving the subsidy, mm-hmm. because when they came up for reauthorization, or not reauthorization, but a redetermination of eligibility, it would mean that they'd be sent back to square one if they were over the threshold that would have been set.
I think we have a parent calling in now to Where We Live. Colleen from East Hartford, you're on Where We Live.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. So how does this change in eligibility impact you for Care for Kids?
I'm a single parent, and, you know, unfortunately, I only have one income coming in, and it's next to impossible to work around having to pay for childcare. And, you know, the families out here that really need this, I mean, it gives them a better opportunity to have their child in, you know, reliable care and somewhere that they can feel that their child is safe and, you know, having child care that benefits the child. I know that in the past I've had my child in care that really didn't make me very comfortable. And with the help of Care for Kids, I now have my daughter in a daycare where it's an education-based daycare. I know that she's safe. I know that she's well taken care of. And the education that she's get working with Dorothelia, which is my care provider, is amazing. And without this Care for Kids, it wouldn't be possible. I don't even believe that I would be able to work because financially I wouldn't be able to make ends meet and without their help.
So, Colleen, you're already getting assistance through Care for Kids. Do you know of other parents who are not enrolled or planning on having children at some point that are going to have trouble, you know, affording daycare?
Yes, that's a lot of people in Connecticut. You know, I have a couple of friends that really could benefit from it. And unfortunately, you know, without this being available, I'm not really sure how they're going to make ends meet.
Helen Figueroa is in studio with us again. She's a CSEA's Child Care Division Director. Helen, can you give people like who may not have to worry about paying for child care in Connecticut, can you give people a perspective of how much it actually costs?
Well, I'm not sure that there are very many people that don't have to worry about the cost of care. I think it runs all the way up through the middle class. To have an infant in care costs more than public tuition at our colleges. And you have 18 years to save for that. But you don't have 18 years. You only have 9 months to prepare for a child. so that's a tough nut to crack. And I think as a country, we're going to see, because this is repeating all over the country, I think we're going to see child care in real, real crisis, because most states are going to be having to cut back on their child care subsidies, which means fewer and fewer families are going to have access to this, whether it's August 1 or January 1st. By the same token, the providers themselves are going to be greatly affected, and therefore the system sort of implodes. Because, for instance, a provider that I was talking to the other day, she's losing three children. She's a family child care provider, but the same is true for centers. She's losing three children to kindergarten. She can have a total of six children during the day. When those children leave in September, she's in New Haven. Most of the children in her care are on Care for Kids. And so she is going to be faced with perhaps closing her family child care. Mm-hmm. That leaves fewer child care spaces available for other families, whether they can afford it or not. And the same will be true of center-based care, who are losing a whole classroom full of children to kindergarten and not being able to replace them, especially in the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's most difficult. And out in rural areas, it's also very difficult to find care.
So what's the answer? Are we hoping that when this legislature gets back into their session, that there could be some money that shows up to help with this subsidy? I mean, we know that the state is penny-pinching in a lot of places.
I think it's the responsibility of every parent, of every elected official, of every child care provider and center. We all need to ensure that our children are safe and nurtured when they're younger. And most other industrialized countries have figured this out. When women work, you need to have child care. And you need to have really good quality child care, because you're raising the next generation. You are helping to raise the next generation. And so I do think that we all have to work together. And we've got to get some more money from the feds, and we've got to get some more money from the state. There just is no way around it, because you can't do child care on the cheap. It's one of the most expensive parts of a family's budget, mm-hmm. other than rent. And yet the child care workforce is one of the lowest paid industries in the country. So we pay more to groom our dogs, to walk our dogs, to even park our cars than we do paying our child care providers, whether it's a center or a family-based mm-hmm. program.
And to give people an idea of the cost, you know, I have a one-year-old daughter, and just shopping around for infant care at a daycare center, we're talking about $1,800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a lot of money.
It is. Well, college tuition is anywhere between $10,000 and $12,000 a year, and the cost of putting an infant in care exceeds that.
Yeah.
So as an example, you could take a family that is earning minimum wage, okay? You've got a single mom earning minimum wage, and that brings her home, say she's working 40 hours a week. That brings her home $384 a week, gross. That's gross, before taxes. And a two-bed or a one-bedroom apartment usually runs around $1,100. And so she's left with $255. $255 she has to set aside. And then I guess it's going to be time to wrap up.
Yep, time to wrap up. But real quick, if people want more information about the Care for Kids program, they can go to ctcareforkids.com. Again, they need to enroll before August 1st to be eligible.
Yes, or you can call 211 Child Care.
All right, well,
and
Helen,
be out there on the streets for child care.
All right, Helen Figueroa, CSEA Child Care Division Director. Thank you so much. We'll have more information on our website, wmpr.org/where we live. Thanks to producers Tucker Ives and Lydia Brown.